Brother's PR desk with the numbers of the ones that he does not trust when he gets another call. Gonna hear him go on, lie to us all.
Good morning, David.
Yeah, morning. As you were talking about the difference between the Democrats and Republicans, I'm reminded of World War One and the ability to exchange currencies and basically cause that war through manipulation of currencies. So after World War Two, Franklin Roosevelt developed the International Monetary Fund so that there would be some sort of a stability and that wars could not be created through manipulating each other's currencies. In other words, they would slander, a currency speculator could buy low, sell high.
I think we're way off topic here, David. We're going to go on to the next caller.
David, lying sack of crap.
For 1917. As a result of Germany's opera piece, the Rothschild War Machine goes into overdrive in America, spreading propaganda which leads President Wilson, under the instructions of American Zionist leader and Supreme Court Justice Louis Brandeis, reneging on his promise to the electorate and taking America into the First World War on April 6th. As per Rothschild's Zionist promise to the British to take America into the war, they decide they want something in writing from the British to prove that they will uphold their side of the bargain. The British Foreign Secretary, Arthur James Balfour, therefore drafts a letter which is commonly known as the Balfour Declaration, which is reprinted below. Foreign Office, November 2nd, 1917. Dear Lord Rothschild, I have much pleasure in conveying to you on behalf of His Majesty's government the following declaration of sympathy with the Jewish Zionist aspirations, which has been submitted to and approved by the Cabinet. His Majesty's government view with favor the establishment in Palestine of a national home for the Jewish people, and it will use their best endeavors to facilitate the achievement of this object, it being clearly understood that nothing shall be done which may prejudice the civil and religious rights of existing non-Jewish communities in Palestine, or the rights and political status enjoyed by Jews in any other country. Oh, yeah, and this is by the guy that forbid sanctuary in England during the pogroms that are going on at this time. I should be grateful if you would bring this declaration to the knowledge of the Zionist Federation. Yours sincerely, Arthur James Balfour. The Rothschilds order the execution by the Bolsheviks they control of Tsar Nicholas II and his entire family in Russia, even though the Tsar had already abdicated on March 2nd. This is both to get control of the country and an act of revenge for Tsar Alexander I, blocking their world government plan in 1815 at the Congress of Vienna, and Tsar Alexander II siding with President Abraham Lincoln in 1864. It is extremely important for them to slaughter the entire family, including women and children, in order to make good on the promise to do so made by Nathan Mayer Rothschild in 1815. It is designed to show the world what happens if you ever attempt to cross the Rothschild. 1963, on June 4th, President John F. Kennedy signs Executive Order 11110, which returned to the U.S. government the power to issue currency without going through the Rothschild-owned Federal Reserve. Less than 6 months later, on November 22nd, President Kennedy is assassinated as Lincoln in 1865. He wanted to print American money for the American people, as opposed to for the benefit of a money-grabbing, warmongering foreign elite. This executive order 11110 is rescinded by President LBJ on Air Force One from Dallas to Washington the same day as President Kennedy was assassinated. Another and probably the primary reason for Kennedy's assassination is, however, the fact that he made it quite clear to Israeli Prime Minister David Ben-Gurion that under no circumstances would he agree to Israel becoming a nuclear state. The Israeli newspaper Haaretz on February 5, 1999, in a review of Avner Cohen's book Israel and the Bomb, states the following: "The murder of American President John F. Kennedy brought to an abrupt end the massive pressure being applied by the U.S. administration on the government of Israel to discontinue the nuclear program.
The book implied that had Kennedy remained alive, it is doubtful whether Israel would today have a nuclear option, unquote. 1965, Israel illegally obtains enriched uranium from NUMEC, Nuclear Materials and Equipment Corporation. 1967, June 8th, the Israelis launch an attack on the USS Liberty with Israeli aircraft and motor torpedo boats in an effort to blame it on Egypt to bring America into the war on their side, and of course, to follow to the letter their Mossad motto, by way of deception, thou shalt do war.
$10,000 or $20,000 to Mayor Lee's campaign, and you will get access to the mayor. And because it is against the law to give more than $500 to a political candidate in San Francisco, they were then taking those large checks, including $10,000 from an FBI agent posing as a businessman named Mr. King, who gave them $10,000, and then they were basically laundering that and breaking it up into smaller contributions and giving it to other people to give $500 each. The mayor then met with Mr. King, in quotes, the FBI agent posing as a business investor, to talk about, as far as we know, what has come out, to talk about business opportunities in San Francisco. The mayor denies that he ever knew that this gentleman had given an illegal campaign contribution, denies that he knew that the three fundraisers were doing anything in his name, and has said that he thinks this is all horrible and they should pay the consequences. The interesting question for me is, who else is involved in this? How high up does it go? In San Francisco, it's a big city. You can't just call the mayor of San Francisco and say, I'd like to invest some money in your town, can I get a meeting? All right. Everybody doesn't get to meet with the mayor. So somewhere along the line, someone with influence in the mayor's office said, you need to meet with this guy. And why? Well, why would you meet with this guy who you've never heard of before, who turns out to be an undercover FBI agent? Why would you meet with him? If somebody said to the mayor, he's given or raised $10,000 for you, that's why you should meet with him. Well, then there's more to this story. The question in my mind is, will one of these people, Zula Jones, who clearly was on the inside in this entire thing, and who Mayor Lee knew, and she knew him very well, she worked for him at the Human Rights Commission when he was the head of that for many years, will she try to avoid a long jail term by giving up someone else? I mean, that's how these things happen. It happens a lot in drug cases, right? You arrest the low-level guy, and then he gives up the bigger guy who gives up the bigger guy. That's what the feds try to do. If there is more to this, and we don't know, maybe for all we know, these are three rogue operators who the mayor knew nothing about. He didn't approve of it. No one in his administration approved of it. They were just three rogue operators doing this for whatever reason, their own glorification. Maybe it just ends here. And that's entirely possible. We don't know. If it doesn't, if it reaches into anyone else at City Hall, will any of the people who are now facing potentially seven-year prison terms say, you know what, I'll plead guilty to something less, I'll do 6 months, and I'll talk? I think that's what has people at City Hall very nervous, is that there's more to come. Now, we do know, I asked at the press conference, I asked if there's going to be more charges, more indictments, and all the FBI and the district attorney would say is the case is still open. This is an ongoing investigation.
Well, Zula Jones, who is, again, a staffer at the Human Rights Commission, is caught on tape by the Secret Wire saying this is a pay-to-play town. Pay-to-play means you have to pay a bribe in order to play the game of getting favors from City Hall. I mean, that came out already. In the trial of Shrimp Boy Chow, his defense attorney said this goes all the way to the top, and this is a huge cover-up. And he was trying to say that Raymond Shrimp Boy Chow isn't doing anything that isn't done by all these other people, and that it was unfair prosecution to hold him up to a standard that you're not holding the mayor up to. Am I stating all that correctly?
You're stating all of that correctly. Now, the federal judge in the case, Judge Breyer, was having none of that. And this will all come up, no doubt, on appeal, right? The federal judge was very, very strict on this and was not very kind to the defense and essentially said, that's not an argument you're allowed to make. You're not allowed to put the mayor on the stand or anyone else in the mayor's administration on the stand. We are not allowed to claim selective prosecution. So that was all an allegation, which has no facts to back it up at this point. The defense attorneys, Tony Serra and his staff, never provided any evidence to show that the mayor was involved in this. They just simply alleged it in court, which they have every right to do as defense counsel. A lot of people in the city were hoping that during this trial, that kind of question would come up. It was the selective prosecution. Could the defense prove that there were higher-ups at City Hall who were also involved in this kind of pay-to-play and corrupt activity? The judge did not allow that at all. So all we have are those allegations. And, you know, of course, the mayor says this is just defense lawyers throwing everything they can at the wall, hoping something will stick, and that, you know, he ran a completely clean campaign, and there is no pay-to-play culture at City Hall.
But now we got Mario Woods' murder being prompting the federal investigation, which is Drone Bomber and company. But hold on, the Mario Woods murder is
killing of Mario Woods. This has been swirling around for more than a month now. Why don't you bring us up to, well, what, go back to the beginning, explain what happened, and then bring us up to the present on Mario Woods.
Okay, the first thing to understand is that Mario Woods is the third young man of color who has been shot by police in San Francisco in the last 2 years in what are very, at least, questionable circumstances.
Shot and killed?
Shot and killed.
Okay.
All right. There was Alex Nieto, who was shot and killed on Bernal Hill. He was a security guard who was carrying a taser, and the police say they thought it was a handgun, and they shot him. Oh, they fired probably 60 rounds, and he was shot 15 times, including when he was down on the ground, where he couldn't have been much of a threat. All right, that is being investigated right now. There is a lawsuit over that, which will go to trial in another few weeks. And then there was Emilcar Perez-Lopez, who was walking along a street in the Mission and was shot and killed by police officers in what appears to have been some confusion about a bicycle theft, not clear that he was armed with anything. And then, of course, there was Mario Woods, which I'm sure many of the listeners have seen the video of Mario Woods. Essentially, this was a African-American man who apparently had a knife in his hand. But if you see in the video, he is surrounded by at least six police officers. He's not going anywhere. He's not going to get away. And as he starts to what appears to be walking away, one of the officers gets in his way, and then they all open fire. And it, I mean, the term that has been used is it looks like a firing squad, and it really does. The police initially, Chief Sir initially, and what I really suspect he wishes he could take back, he immediately defended the officers and said this was entirely appropriate. The guy was armed with a knife. He was dangerous. He was a threat to himself and others. You know, he could have killed one of the officers, so they had to kill him first. The video does not show him raising his knife to attack an officer. In fact, the video suggests that his hands were at his sides and that he was not any immediate threat to anybody. As I say, he certainly wasn't going to get away. There were so many officers there. So the chief immediately said that the officers had behaved properly before there was any investigation, before there was any internal or external review of this. I think probably before the chief had even seen that video. And a lot of people were really angry to say, wait, you didn't even look for the facts. You immediately said that the cops must have acted properly based only on what they said happened, which, as it turns out, does not seem to be consistent with the video evidence. So, and the mayor, of course, has supported the police chief. So what we have now, and why a lot of people are angry, is we have a young man who is dead, and there's been no accountability at all. The officers who shot him are back on duty, collecting a paycheck. The chief, who oversees the department, continues to collect a rather large paycheck and is back on duty with the support of the mayor. Nothing has happened. No one is accountable for this killing. So I think that's what has the protesters very angry. Protesters took over part of Mayor Lee's swearing in and at one point shouted so loudly for justice for Mario Woods that you couldn't hear the mayor actually getting sworn in. It was very clear how unhappy people were. In fact, Governor Jerry Brown did the swearing in, and after he had sworn in the mayor, he looked at him and said, "I'm going to leave you to your fate," and walked away. So yesterday there was a big march downtown by Mario Woods supporters, people who want justice, marched down to the Super Bowl city. You know, a couple hundred protesters and probably an equal number or more of police officers watching them, trying to keep them out of the street. As the Super Bowl arrives and the national media comes to San Francisco, there are going to be more and more protests like this, with people trying to shine a light on the lack of accountability in the police department in San Francisco, as there have been in police departments all over the country, lack of accountability for police officers shooting and killing young men of color.
My guest is Tim Redman. We're going to open the phones in about 20 minutes to your phoned-in questions and comments at 1-800-95.
Well, this is previously recorded.
With all things related to Halfway to the Stars City, they're collecting money for a statue for Tony Bennett to be implanted in front of the Fairmont Hotel. Not sure that's the best use of hard-earned dollars. Of course, these dollars probably aren't very hard-earned, but in any case...
I think you're right. This is the very wealthy philanthropic community that they're trying to raise money from. One could argue, certainly, that if that's what they want to spend their money on, that's fine. One could also certainly argue that we have, we're in an El Nino situation where homeless people are threatened every day with dying of pneumonia exposure on the streets as the temperatures drop and the rain continues. And you could certainly argue that some of that money might be better spent taking care of some of those people.
Well, Charlotte Schultz, formerly Charlotte Mayard, Charlotte Swig, she's been Charlotte a lot of times with different husbands, all of whom seem to have died. She's got a bad record. Well,
then let's run down the bad record for San Francisco. Having sat in front of George and Charlotte's limo outside the Ritz-Carlton when Tiki Killer was there and Code Pink was snake dancing in front of their limo and there were like three cops on the corner and never mind. Where were we?
Schultz seems to be relatively healthy. So, in any case...
For somebody that murdered Gaddafi's daughter, but not even getting into the drone bombers' genocide of mother of African Union's country.
She is the head of... What's the word for it? She's... it'll come to me. She's... like the diplomacy.
She's the city's chief of protocol.
Protocol, that's the word I was searching for, the chief of protocol. In the meantime, back to Mario Woods. The mayor, of course, backed up the police chief 100%. And then when this controversy didn't go away, he has finally, a month later, decided to call in the Justice Department and ask them to investigate in an attempt to... clean up the mess that is clearly in his lap right now?
Yes. I mean, he really had no choice. The Board of Supervisors was calling on the Justice Department to investigate. The city, the people of San Francisco, have lost faith in the ability of the city itself to properly investigate this. Because, as I say, this is the third one. So far, there's been no accountability for anybody. And people are feeling like, the police department can't investigate itself. We're not going to find out what's going on here, and therefore we need an outside investigator. The question in my mind is, the mayor and the chief are talking about we need better training and we need better policies, and maybe we need to train the officers not to shoot so quickly. And of course, the chief wants to give them tasers. I look at that situation with the six officers or seven officers surrounding Mario Woods, and I think, oh my God, if they had tasers, they all would have fired their tasers, and he would have gotten hit with, 97 million volts, and that probably would have killed him too. But aside from that, the chief is talking about this, and the mayor is talking about this, and I imagine that one of the things that the Justice Department, should they decide to do this, will come in and do is they'll make recommendations. We should change this, and we should change that. And that's all fine. And there are policies that need to be changed. The kind of shoot first and wonder if it was really a threat until later needs to be changed. But the bigger question here is, if we don't even follow our existing policies and no one is accountable, how is it going to change if we get new policies? How is it going to change if we, get tasers and tell the officers you're only allowed to use it under these circumstances, and then they use them willy-nilly on anyone they want to slow down, and nothing happens to them? That's the big question. Policy changes aren't going to make any difference unless someone is accountable for violating the policies. And there are many who would argue, based on the video, that the officers involved in the Mario Woods shooting violated the city's own existing policies. And yet, nothing has happened.
Well, I think that the police chief and the mayor were very outspoken at the beginning because they didn't know there was a video of the event, and they would have gotten away with it if it weren't for the video. So, quite frankly, I think they were blindsided by the fact that they got caught.
Blindsided by the truth. Oh, my goddess. Now, that may... careful if you were paying attention. That may have given you a mental whiplash because, of course, you would think that being hit from behind by something you don't see, which is being blindsided, would be hard to do when it's something you know. Now, we don't know it, so we are being blindsided. The mayor is being paid to play. In other words, they pay to play the mayor $10,000 a whack. In this case, Mr. King was his pseudonym, met with Mayor Lee, and the game is paid to prevaricate 10 points down the dial, and you heard the DJ paid to prevaricate hitting the gas in the getaway when the when this subject came up.
Anti war movement are very familiar with this. We used to call it affinity groups. If you assume correctly that whatever group you are in is being penetrated by the FBI, when something serious happens, you don't do it in a meeting. You do it with some people you know and trust in affinity group, and then it doesn't get penetrated. That's one of the reasons why the FBI has never been able to figure out what's going on in any of the popular movements, and other intelligence agencies are the same. They can't, unquote. Back to Barry's Wickers, the shame of Noam Chomsky and the gatekeepers of the left. I'm sorry, this is pure disinformation on Chomsky's part. The CIA and FBI and spy organizations.
Yeah. I hope that's not the end, but...
General have been and continue to be extremely successful at surveillance and penetrating popular movements. Of course they don't want that to be known, but the FBI's infamous COINTELPRO counterintelligence provocateur program finally did become well known. And just on the sideline of the FBI, that Robert, I don't know the first name of Agent Zent, okay. Now, the Kenyan bombings have the FBI's fingerprints all over it because not only did they release Mohammed the American from the Royal Man Canadian cops, and it was a local agent, Zent, Z-E-N-T, I believe was his name, so he could go take the picture of the African embassy so that USA man could point to where it's parked. And these incredibly racist, these are Arab proxy assassins, okay, indulging in the racism that's been raging for 1,000 years in the slave trade that lasted until 1963 in Saudi Arabia.
If we have the Turkey, Saudi, Qatari connection winning in Syria, we're going to have a gas pipeline from Qatar to the Mediterranean, and Qatar is going to be providing the European Union in the future with lots of liquefied natural gas. If we have a unified Syria victory, let's put it this way, with help from Iran and even help from Russia, which might seem contradictory, but it's not, we would have the Iran-Iraq-Syria pipeline. And then Iran and Iraq would be providing liquefied natural gas to Europe in the long run, even with help from Russia, because Gazprom has already said on the record that they will be investing in this pipeline as well. So this is resource wars. This is the most important thing. All these Jaish al-Islam,
okay,
Arar al-Sham,
Dash, Pepe,
and all these
Pepe, I think you would agree.
On the ground. This is just a detail.
Okay, but it is maybe just a detail, but there's going to be no pipelines if this war continues, okay? so let me go to Dan, okay, about resolution here. One
of
thing
course,
I think that's really important.
Of course. I was talking about the long game.
I
yes.
got it. Okay.
Yes.
Dan in Oxford here. It seems to me, unless there's someone in the American administration wants to continue to put everything into jeopardy, I do worry that there could be a possible U.S.-Russia conflict in Syria if it's not planned out, if it's not thought out well enough. But on the other hand here, and Philippe mentioned it in Tel Aviv here, we have two sets of outsiders here. We have Iran, Saudi Arabia, the United States, and Russia. Now, this is somehow that's that the four powers that can actually end this. What's the combination where they all can sit down? Go ahead, because that's probably how it's going to work. Go ahead.
Well, I think it's important to understand, if we're talking about the possibility of U.S. and Russian war, it's important to understand that U.S. and Britain are already at war with Russia. It's not conventional yeah. war directly against Russia, but it's fought using terrorist proxies and it's fought using economic sabotage, the collapse of the oil price, the sanctions, the insinuations about the death of Litvinenko being used as a means to strong-arm Europe into stepping up and continuing and maintaining sanctions and so on. And Pepe is absolutely right that this is to do with who gets to monopolize gas supplies to Europe. Will it be Qatar or Iran? Those two pipelines. But it's much. But that in itself is just a microcosm of the big picture yep. in the world of the rise of the East, the rise of the BRICS, and the decline of the West. And the point is every independent regional power sees that it makes more sense to align themselves with the rising powers in the East rather than the war-hungry maniacs in the West. And the West realizes this, and it realizes, actually, I think, that the age of the client state is coming to an end, and that these powers, if they are genuinely independent, then they are not going to align themselves with the West. There's no point. They're in decline. So the West is actually seeking now to destabilize and destroy these states because it knows it cannot control them. So when you say, well, there's, you know, there'll be no pipeline if the war continues, well, that's a good enough outcome from the point of view of the Western strategic
exactly.
planners, because they know that a genuinely independent Syria under whoever's control is not going to ally itself with Israel, with US, with Britain and so on. It's going to ally itself with the rising powers in the East. So that is really, that is kind of underlying this whole conflict and even underlying the pipeline wars as well, I think.
Philippe, would you like to weigh in there? I think, you know, what Dan said is really interesting, is that it really has,
yes.
I mean, from a Western perspective, it's all about Assad, you know, but, you know, if you step back, it's really all about sovereignty and who controls that sovereignty and how strong
yeah.
or how weak a state will be, because a lot of these states in the region become weaker because of this conflict here. I mean,
we can understand this clearly by the euphemism Western-backed. Now, that means it's coming out of your pocket. That means you're paying the assassination campaign involved in the Contra War against the socialist republics. It never stopped, okay? It's what drove me out of the mountains to come down here to chain myself in the way of the weapons chain that cut my friend's legs off when he asked the Great Spirit not to move out of his way.
I mean, this is a very important geopolitical issue to be addressed. Go ahead, Philippe in Tel Aviv.
Well, with respect, I think the last analysis, not yours, the one previous to that in London, was a bit infantile with the conspiracy theorizing. But yes, there's a global or regional power Cold War going on. Not
yes, it's called conspiracy to murder. That's why those who theorize using the truth are so pejorative in the minds of the paid prevaricators. Okay, you are paid to violate 182, 187 California Penal Code, and you are such chumps because you're getting punked out for pennies on the dollar. You know, people get paid millions to knock off people, and you're just doing it for some measly little salary if you are as stupid as you pretend. Now, actually, there's the stick out there, which means that you are just basically cowardly, okay, if not the big carrot under the table, which means that you are, you know, straight up evil in the scale of greedy evil. But really, I mean, you know, I should avoid the words that are so loaded.
Not so cold anymore, and Russia and other countries are vying for influence. But again, I have to ask, what is the end game? Russia can be accused of many of the things that the West was accused of. Rightfully, I think the West has completely
for example,
blundered its way in the Middle East and made things worse.
For example,
so for example, supporting war. All right, so Yes.
What do you mean
support
anymore?
So Russia is now in Syria in earnest.
Okay. I'm going to have to teach you.
I'm sorry.
I mean, your entire premise.
Your entire premise is incorrect.
Well, no, because you're going
to
chew up time on a false premise. Number one, the sovereign government in Damascus invited Russia under international law to protect its borders and to fight terrorism on its territory. That is a fact.
Even assuming that's true and that Assad is legitimate.
The United States and its allies every single day violate the sovereignty of Syria without its permission. It supports terrorist groups in Syria against the legitimate government in Damascus. I know you don't like Assad. I know you don't like the government in Damascus. But your entire premise is wrong.
Do you like Assad?
It's indifferent if I like him or not.
Do you like Assad?
It's indifferent. It's a wrong question
to ask.
But
it's not because I'm asking what the end game is.
You know, I don't like Obama. I don't like Obama and I don't like the royal family of Saudi Arabia.
The important
okay,
people
but
is
I don't think
the
they should be overthrown.
Like
I would like you asked me a question. I would like to be able to just make a comment about the question you asked.
Jump in.
The West is being accused of all these excesses. Sometimes legitimately. I mean, a lot of what was said I agree with. But now Russia's in there trying to stabilize the country in the way that is advantageous to it. But I don't see the end game. You're supporting a dictator that's not supported by, I believe, the majority of the population, if not a very substantial part of the population, 20 million...
Oh, of course, I have to jump in because this is DJ Mouse hearing the crunch of the puppy under the bumper of the driver, not even backing off the gas. Never mind, hit the brakes after Libya because elected President Assad had 55% support before the Arab Sting, as racist in its framing as the silence of the anti-black genocide hitting Africa in its wake.
Refugees. The Saudi
elected.
Countries in the region will not accept him. The militant and Islamist fighters by his father.
I could care less what Saudi Arabia thinks about Syria. I could care less. They have done more than any other country to undermine that country, break it up, create millions and millions of refugees. And you talk about a dictator? Come on. That's ridiculous.
It's Assad who created the refugees.
It was the West-backing proxies that are trying to destroy this state here. Go ahead, Dan. Your analysis was called infantile. Would you like to react to it?
Let's look at this. Don't chew up time.
Go ahead, Dan in Oxford.
Well, let's look at who created the refugees, who created the war. Assad came to power 2005?
Irrelevant.
I believe his father was in power since 1970. When did the refugees start? Oh, 2011, when the war started. Who started the war? There were insertion of foreign fighters backed by the US and Britain. That's when the war started. That's when the refugees started. It's not the Assad regime that's suddenly created out of nowhere. It's the proxy war that was initiated in 2011 by the West that created it.
Okay. You want to react to that, Philippe? That's a very good logical
timeline based on facts.
Go ahead.
Okay, so obviously the proxy war contributed to it, but the atrocities committed by Assad are what fueled most of it. It doesn't matter in terms of the question you asked me. I want to know, what is the end game? How does Russia...
Okay, now, the 2013, DJ Mouse is out at the Concord Weapons Station where the nukes for Hiroshima and Nagasaki were shipped from, and also the penetrators, the illegal WMDs intended for Iran, headed to Diego Garcia, I believe, just a few years ago. And
Russia believe peace will come by supporting Hezbollah.
I have the answer.
Assad,
I have
the
answer.
The area
I have the answer. If you want to listen to it, now I'm going to ask Pepe if he agrees or disagrees with me, because there is a military solution to this war, and it's Russia's helping, being the Air Force, to secure the sovereignty and the legitimacy of the Syrian state.
And if U.S. military is going to go there to bomb the Socialist Republic, then I will be back, as I was in 2013, with my flyer saying, or my little sign saying, Dear Drone Bomber, the Alawite children kidnapped from Latakia in your... or the Alawite children in your bogus Chemtech video were kidnapped in Latakia and identified by their mothers. So... that false flag thing was Yeah, obviously we like mustered enough opposition, so this is that endgame. But go on, crosstalk. Peter Lavelle from RT.
Okay, and it's committed itself to doing just that.
So
and
it wouldn't have intervened. Opposition.
It wouldn't have intervened if it didn't think it could do it. Pepe, what do you think?
Look, let's go back to the motivations of all the players on the ground. Let's start with Turkey. Turkey, they want to project influence in the Arab world. So Syria will be perfect. It's contiguous. There is a Sunni business elite. But it's going down the drain because Erdogan and Davutoglu, they betted on Salafi jihadists to help their agenda. Absolutely stupid. And this is being contested by the best analytical minds in Turkey itself. And I am in touch with some of these people.
And he's terminally pessimistic, so I'm going to go back to the beginning of this interview.
Go ahead.
Okay, so obviously the proxy war contributed to it, but the atrocities committed by
in Turkey that the U.S. could impose a military solution, that a political one is not essential. What do you make of that? Because what's the whole point of these talks on Friday for to start the some kind of ceasefire and end this conflict in Syria? Go ahead.
Well, the U.S. and Britain have consistently, since peaceful negotiations have been raised way back in 2011, 2012, ever since it's been on the cards, the U.S. and Britain have gone out of their way to sabotage any prospect of them taking place. Now, the tactics have changed a little bit since the Russian intervention. The tactics have changed from saying that Assad must go as a precondition for talks to take place. They're now saying Assad must go as a precondition for the successful conclusion of any talks. All of this is a means of still the same kind of strategy of trying to sabotage any peaceful settlement, because what it is a message to the fighters: keep fighting. You don't have to compromise. You don't have to agree to anything. You don't really have to seriously negotiate. Mm-hmm. Maybe we just show up, and we will impose something. We will impose something if needs be at the end. It's a way of egging them on and keeping the fighting going as a means of destabilizing Syria. And I think it demonstrates that the U.S. commitment to peaceful negotiations is clearly lacking.
Okay, Pepe, one of the things that Biden was getting at is that the U.S. could impose a military solution on Syria, meaning fighting ISIL. But, you know, I find it very hard to believe that they could just go in there and surgically take care of ISIL and then they'll withdraw and then they'll support a peace process. I think they would probably take the regime out of Damascus and, while doing the same thing. It's hard to believe they would do it otherwise. Go ahead.
Joe Biden, please, come on. That's ridiculous. Look, let's look at what's going on in the terrain. That's the most important thing. This charade in Geneva is supposed to last, and Stéphane de Mistura himself, he already said that on the record, it's going to last at least for the next 6 months. It could last another year, two or three, because what really matters is what's going on in the ground in this, I would say, a why. There is a why in Syria. This is the Syria that matters. This is urban Syria in the west part of the country, industrialized, urban. And Damascus in the north, roughly Homs and Hama in the middle, Latakia over here, and Aleppo in the north. So if you control this why, you control Syria. And this is what's happening since the Russian intervention. The Russian Air Force, the Syrian Arab Army, the help from Hezbollah, which is essential, especially Syria-Lebanon border, and those 2,000 Iranian special forces, including a lot of Afghans, by the way, they are making, you know, very, very strong progress for the past 3 months. You don't read about this in Western corporate
That's
media.
Right.
Forget it.
That's
but
right.
Facts on the ground are being altered. So if you don't control the desert, that's not a big deal. The only thing that matters in the desert is around Dar al-Azor because of the oil wells. And they'll be moving there eventually. But the most important thing is secure the why that I mentioned in the beginning. Help Syrian Kurds, which the Americans are also doing, to secure the border with Turkey. And this is where Turkey and the U.S. are absolutely opposed, because Turkey wants to cut off the union of these Syrian Kurd cantons in the east and west near the Turkish border.
And they cannot do it because the Syrian Kurds probably going to take over everything with help from the Russians, with help from Syria, and with help from the Americans as well.
Let's keep with the talks here. If I go to Philippe in Tel Aviv, both our previous guests have brought up really good points. Is the facts on the ground keep changing now, and actually to the advantage of Assad and his allies here. And also, I know when looking at the meeting between Kerry and Lavrov here, they were shaking hands and smiling, but they were talking about very different peace talks. I don't see how either side can really square that. They're looking at very different groups to sit down, and most people won't even show up. Go ahead, in Tel Aviv.
Peter, I'm sorry to have to agree with you.
Oh, no.
I don't think the Americans have the stomach for...
Keep going.
The Americans have the stomach for a real fight. The American administration doesn't inspire confidence. It doesn't have the stomach for a real fight. And as you're saying, the two sides are not going to see eye to eye. I actually don't think the biggest problem is between the Russians and the Americans. I think Iran is going to be the odd man out here. The Russians have indicated that they're not wed to Assad, that some transition that maintains their interests is okay. The West is obviously supporting rebels that want to oust Assad. I think it comes down to Iran and Saudi influence. They're not going to agree on a transitional government. I don't see any easy way for them to agree. And so this is going to keep going. And the Americans, the introduction suggested the Americans might be headed to a confrontation with Russia. I would be extremely surprised if this president is at all willing to be robust enough to stand up to Russian ambitions or even presence in Syria. During the recent State of the Union address, he basically made the case that he wants America out of these complicated quagmires in the Middle East.
Okay, well, if I can go to Dan here, I wonder why the Americans go in there and start their problems for themselves and everybody else on the ground. I mean, we go all across the entire region. Almost all of these wars are completely unnecessary, or as he used to President Obama's word, dumb wars, okay? But let's keep focused on Syria right here. Mm. No, I think that, it's, Dan, again, I agree with Pepe, is that you won't hear a lot about this in Western media because Russia has actually stabilized the situation for the Damascus government, and they are making gains very slowly, but they are making gains here. And this is the real game changer here. It's not what terrorist group you want to rebrand, color coat some kind of terrorist group and say these are actually good guys. Train left the station a long time ago because the winners, the people that are going to win this, are creating facts on the ground as we speak. Go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is dividing the U.S. government. I mean, defeat breeds division. You alluded to this divide between Biden talking about military solution whilst Kerry is supposedly about to start pushing for peace talks and so on. So defeat breeds division, and defeat is exactly what's happening to U.S. policy in Syria. And so there are divides between those who want to try and salvage something at the negotiating table before all of their forces in the field get wiped out.
There's significant division on the political tables if you were to go to all the people off the ballot and then juxtapose them with all the people that are on. And I don't think Bernie Sanders will save Palestine, but other than that, he's pretty good. I was going to go to how Siegel faction members plan to dismember Pacifica and divide up the pieces worth over $100 million among themselves. Siegel and his partner, board member Margie Wilkinson, even went so far as to create approximately 2 years ago a secret shadow corporation under their control, discovered only by accident barely 4 months ago by Pacifica's secretary, whose purpose, Siegel admitted when pressed, was to acquire the licenses and assets of Pacifica stations if the foundation went into bankruptcy. In bankruptcy, it now appears clear that they had long been trying to engineer through their positions on the board and Siegel's position as Pacifica's attorney. The assets and licenses of the foundation that they intended to acquire are estimated to be worth in excess of $100 million. As Pacifica board members and fiduciaries, Siegel and Wilkinson were legally obligated to inform the board not only that their secret corporation existed, but also how they totally controlled it, what its destructive purpose was, and how its existence created a highly illicit conflict of interest. i.e. their shadow corporation succeeded only if Pacifica failed. But of course, they did not reveal any of that to the board. Siegel was doubly obligated as Pacifica's attorney to make his control of the secret corporation and the severe conflict of interest it entailed known to the board. His failure to do so, along with numerous other allegations of serious professional misconduct, are currently the subject of an investigation by California Bar Association and the California Attorney General. We are keeping our fingers crossed, and you did hear Jerry Brown quoted as saying, yes, he's leaving the Brown machine, who, of course, Willie Brown is inside the loop when there was that NORAD stand down. This is the Netanyahu Willie Brown travel stand down that's obviously connected to the the Jim Crow coup, because in December of 2000, the author of the secret bombing of Cambodia, dropping more bombs than we did in World War II, the U.S. that is, on Cambodia without telling Congress, never mind the American public and all. So now the election is being stolen in Iowa caucus. It starts out. Greg, let me see your activity log, because then I will see voter fraud, missing precincts, how Clinton stole Iowa. And they got a couple little sound bites maybe we'll get to. Media is reporting a virtual tie between Mrs. Bill, but don't be fooled. Clinton stole Iowa. There's even video proof of her dirty tricks. So here is, let's do the, give me an X. Well, this is from Russia Insider. And, I agree. No, Russian side, he's just cooking this. That is from Russia Insider, politics, voter fraud, and missing precincts, how Clinton stole Iowa. So they flip coins, right, in Iowa when there's an odd number, and all the coin flips went to the Poppy Bush's Mina Cookstand attendance, the Clinton cookstand attendance in the opium war, the guns for drugs, House and Fuss took his lucky rabbit's foot when that 15-year-old shot him down and sang like a canary, pointed to Luis Posada Carriles and Felix Rodriguez, who got Million Rodriguez to shake down the Medellin cartel for $10 million. Now, locally, we got the murder bosses in the Drugs for Guns episode of the Poppy Bush's Opium War, the Contra War. And that's really what the Syria thing I focus on, is because that assassination is against a socialist republic, okay? The Contra War has never ended, has never shifted anything. But the voter fraud, so they flip coins when it's odd and always went to Mrs. Bill. And also the, was there one other thing? I can read it past this. Sanders came, has informed the campaign, the caucus results from 90 precincts are missing. So there's 90 missing precincts from Iowa. And anyway, that's quick explanation of the voter fraud in Iowa, vote fraud in Ohio.
And those who want to just push, step up military involvement and so on. In reality, in fact, these two positions kind of work in tandem and are working in tandem and work together, because actually those pushing for the negotiations, I don't think are genuinely serious, as I've said. I think they're trying to go to the negotiations in order to try and buy some breathing space, in order to reorganize their forces, get more unity between the various death squads that are at each other's throats and so on. So nevertheless, there are divides in the U.S. administration, and this is a good thing because we want to see their strategy defeated.
Okay, Pepe, also in the American Inspired, go ahead, jump in.
Yeah, I wanted to ask, we spoke about this last time, Peter, I was on this show. What is the end game here? Obviously, there's no easy solution here. The Americans have stumbled from blunder to blunder. Nobody, I think, serious can question that. This administration in the Middle East has made a lot of mistakes. But on the Russian side, they're coming in to defend their interests. They're coming in to protect Assad. That is not supporting that side in the Middle East. A continuation of what is, in effect, Iran.
non-starter. Iran already had influence. Iran and Syria are very close allies. They have been for a very long time. No, it's American policy.
But
I mean, if you're anti-Iranian,
if you're
anti-Iranian, okay, the best thing that ever happened to Iran was American foreign policy. It just empowers Iran left and right. Every single step the Americans take advances a totally different agenda. And Syria is at the very heart of it right now. Okay, Dan, you wanted to jump in Oxford?
Can I just say this?